Hello and welcome to You Set the Tone, the podcast that takes an X-ray to the medical drama show ER. We examine the show with surgical precision and celebrate the high pressure and beating hearts of the show. My name is Sean.
I am Ed.
And I'm Sharon.
And today on the show, we are talking about Season 4, Episode 14, Family Practice. First of all, hello everyone. How are you this week?
Hi, I'm waving.
You are, which is brilliant for a podcast.
Yeah, I'm waving, brilliant.
Thank you.
I'm very well. How are you, Sean?
I am very well. Thank you very much. I love this episode. Sharon, you hated this episode. Is that right? You took time out of your day to go, I hate this episode.
I did.
And everything about it.
I mean, we'll get to it. And there are reasons that I do find this episode just a bit boring. And some of those reasons are, you know, what's the word? Some of those reasons I think are valid, and some are just the mood I am in, and for other reasons, like I was saying, you know, we took that break, and so for me coming back, I was like, oh, we're not in the ER. I missed the ER. So having a whole episode out of it and having a whole episode away from Carter was just torture.
Let's go, that's what it all is.
Where's Carter? But that's all it was for me. There's so many things in this which are great, but I just wasn't in the mood. But then there are things that I'm just like, all right, did it need to just be the whole episode on the family? Could it have been interspersed, just because we don't really know these parents? And I'm really for, you know, going outside of the ER and learning more about people, but for me, I didn't feel like I'd got enough of the greens to be invested. And maybe because Mark's been annoying me the past kind of he's not, you know, the way he's been with Cynthia and just a few different things, I'm just like, I'm not invested in you at the moment, good sir. Those are my feelings.
Yeah. I think like the episode in general, it's the second episode in the same season to focus nearly almost on Mark. Obviously, it was the other one, it was Mark and Doug, whereas this one is just Mark.
Yes.
I agree to what you said. It's not a word against Anthony Edwards. He's as solid as he always is. Absolutely. It's just, I don't like him as much so far. I know that this will change going forward, but at the moment I'm just like, oh, do I really want 45 minutes of grumpy Mark is grumpy?
Because I think that's what we've had. I think it's because that's what it's been for quite a while now. I don't think as an audience, or for me, I'm not in a good place with Mark enough to spend a whole episode with him and to care about him. Whereas with the Doug thing, you know, that has always been bubbling under. We kind of met the dad. We knew all this charismatic stuff. You know, he had the whole Carol thing, and then we had him and Mark's relationship, which, you know, we're all invested in, is interesting. We had them to play off each other, and then Carol turns up, like, and we were kind of talking about this a bit on WhatsApp, but to me it felt like the antithesis of that. That episode was so brilliant and so interesting, and so just there's so many great things, and then this just felt a bit like, right, now we're going to do the same thing but just in reverse, like we'll make it but the most boring version of it. I don't know, that's just my own feelings.
It's a hard it feels like, you know, when we talk about our filler episodes, that they're okay, but they're to get us to a point.
Yes
And I feel like this was an episode that got us to a point with Mark and Cynthia, their relationship ending, and us learning a bit more about his dad. But it still doesn't... You're right, that other episode was so huge.
Mm.
Enormous. So
and
much.
Beautifully shot. This one isn't as beautifully shot. And I think there's something quite cinematic as well about just the way that it was filmed, but also kind of how beautiful everything looked and where they were. Whereas this doesn't have that same kind of quality or visuals to keep you interested.
Anyway, should we get into it, Sean?
Let's get into it.
So basically, the catalyst of the episode is that off screen, Mark's mum has had an accident. She's had a fall and she's gone into hospital. And so he jumps on a plane, flies home to California, right?
For some reason, San Diego.
I had Florida in my head for some reason. But, I mean, until halfway through, Cynthia says, oh, I'd never seen the Pacific. I'm like, well, I may not be a fancy geographer, but I know Florida and the Pacific are pretty far away from each other.
Is that because it's kind of, I know what you mean though, because it's like, it feels very much like they're in like an old people's kind of community and they go to the oldie people and it's where people have retired to kind of, I can completely see why you've got that feeling. Yeah, definitely.
So Mark arrives at the hospital and then, you know, his dad is introduced with a cigarette being stubbed out on the ground. So we know straight away that's kept going.
Mark's got a goatee. Did you notice the goatee's back?
It's horrible.
Every time he has a goatee, I think the episodes where he's got a goatee is the episodes that he seems to act out. It's a bit like he's on the darkest universe, timeline Mark. For my community fans. But, you know, that's what it's like. He's got this goatee and he becomes just dull to me.
No, he's
a douchebag, doesn't he?
Yeah, and again, it's like, you know, kind of, I feel so bad, like poor Anthony Edwards, I want to give him a cuddle, but it, anyway, right, so yes.
Yes, let's.
Anthony Edwards, goatees are not for you. Right, so so he arrives, his dad is there, and his dad is like, all right, come on, he's like, come on, we're going, and his dad's like, sure, we'll have to wait for your friend. And Mark's like, come again. And then we message about this, all of us, the three of us, physically wrecked.
Physically. And,
as the door is opened, and there's Cynthia going, hi, Mark. And I'm just like, oh dear God. We're basically led to believe that she more or less overheard him talking about it, as opposed to that might not be the exact way she found out, but that's definitely the impression we got, that she overheard him discussing, I have to go home because my mom's had a fall.
Definitely not a plan, was it? There was no point where he kind of had said to her, or she'd said, you know, it does sound very much like he got up and left and she just followed after hearing or whatever, like you say.
She's like she wants to help out. And I'm like, oh, read the room.
Read so many rooms.
In theory, what she's doing is a lovely gesture. But unfortunately, we know we sort of knew when she was walking through the doors. Although there was a split second of be Doug.
Your friend's coming. And even when he said she's on her way, she called and I thought, be Susan.
That would have been an amazing cameo.
Yes.
That episode would have been 50,000 times better.
Thank you.
Sorry, Mariska Hargitay, it's not about you, it's about Cynthia.
And that's it as well, because I'm going to be quite blunt about Cynthia in this episode, but it isn't, I mean, it's the way she's written, and Mariska Hargitay really plays her perfectly she is that heavily dependent. She plays her a bit like a puppy. If you show the puppy some love, she is your best friend. But if you bark at your dog, to use a pun there, tail between legs, and the whole mood of the room will change straight away. And yet if you just go, sorry, oh, everything's fine, everything's great, everything's wonderful, and that's really, at this point, that's Cynthia.
That is definitely you have got that to a T. That is her, absolutely.
They go straight to hospital and because they do, they go straight, I have these order scenes wrong in my head, so they go straight to the hospital and his mum is in a really altered state. So this gets Mark worried straight away, because he's like, I thought I was coming, you know, because she'd broken her leg. What the hell is going on in her mind? You know, he's like, well, is she doped out of it? Because he questions the medication she's been put on. And, you know, kind of the poor night nurse is just like, dude, I'm just a pill pusher. Please, you know,
kind of. I just walked in. I know as much as you know.
She's seen the can with her leg up and... her mood is all over the place.
Really manic, isn't it?
Yeah, feels mania.
And I thought as well, what was interesting for us as well, because we've met her before, as we've discussed, and the last time we met her was just a world away. So even for us as an audience, it's like, oh, you know, I feel like we are very much like Mark. We're walking in and we're quite shocked, because we're like, oh, she's so different. There is definitely something not right there.
Yeah.
That's actually, do you know what? To put a tick beside this episode in terms of a positive, it really is good at it. We as the audience sort of find out in real time that there's so much more going on with his parents than we were led to believe. And through that, we get to know much more about his dad. His mom, fortunately, she is much more of a plot device in this episode. She's less of a character than she is... through her, there will be X amount of revelations.
Yes, yeah. She's the one who's, she's the reason they come together, and she is the one who kind of pushes the storyline in the sense of, you know, dropping the bits of information where she does and when she does. But also, you know, it is an interesting look as well at kind of elder care. And this is another reason I was saying I'm not the best, I'm not the fan of this episode, is because it deals with that horrible thing of your parents deteriorating, yes, not being well. And I'm very lucky, you know, touch all the wood, that my parents are very healthy at the moment and fine. Yeah. But it's that big fear as well of just of living and working away. And when you get home, they've been hiding stuff from you. So yeah, you don't ever really know how they are, but just also facing that kind of reality of possibly losing your parents. So that's just another for me.
No, it's stressful. And it's having seen, as a lot of people have, having seen an older relative succumb to a form of dementia, it's really hard watching, isn't it? I mean, full props to Bonnie Bartlett, who played Mrs. Green. She knocked out of the park, because she did go from, as you say, mania to depression to... She's quite cruel in this episode. So
yeah, hasn't really got a filter, has she? So yeah. Really saying what is on her mind.
She has a go at Mark. Well, not Mark, but I was going to say, no, I never liked that Jen. She's a sourpuss. And that Rachel of hers, she's getting sourly as well. But okay, Jen. Yeah, definitely.
But your granddaughter. A kid. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It just felt so...
It's okay. I mean, she's being played by Lawrence Fishburne, so, like, she can take it. You know?
She's a big girl, yeah.
That's a joke we haven't used in a while.
So we haven't. Thank you. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
I thought you'd agree with Mrs. Green when she said that about Jen. I thought, I feel like Sean's been in her ear a little bit here.
Oh, absolutely. I was messing with her medication to get her to say that. Yeah, that's
kind of... Just every so often, just be like, Jen's evil. Jen, look at the way she looks. And she's
remember you fell off that stepladder? Jen pushed it.
Yeah, it was Jen. But also there's this really uncomfortable moment before kind of they actually even get into the room where Cynthia's kind of explaining why she's there, and she's very much like, I mean, I had to come because, you know, this is family. And it's like, oh, it's not your family though, you know. Mm-hmm. You and Mark are so not in that place where it's not the Carol turning up when Doug needed her, is it? It's the
no.
I'm trying to force this because I'm scared of losing you.
It was, I think, when Carol turned up for Doug, it was that moment of just letting out the breath and like, this feels right.
Yeah.
And then when Cynthia walked through the door, it was the sharp intake of breath.
Yeah. And I don't think I released it until, you know, I think I was just like, oh, yeah. God, this is so horrifying. I just felt so embarrassed for her as well. I just thought, oh.
I was cringing myself inside out through the whole episode. It's just like, every time she opened her mouth, I was like, oh, Cynthia, what? She keeps making it about her all the way through the episode.
Yes.
I'm like, it's not.
Like, if you're going to come and be there, what you need to do is do that thing where you stand back and you do all the support stuff. You're the one, you know, getting the food in, making sure everybody's fed, making sure you're doing all the practical stuff that other people don't have time for because they're trying to arrange stuff or trying to cope with the feeling, you know, all that stuff. If you're going to do it, you do that. But yeah, you're right. She keeps kind of pouring her, I need you, I feel needy kind of on him. I think what's interesting about this as well is for Green, because we know he doesn't get on with his dad and there's issues there.
Yeah.
So his mom is being treated in kind of that, the, you know, this Navy hospital, this, which, you know, we know that Green has always resented about his dad. You know, it took his dad away from him. It made him and his dad strangers and all this stuff. So he straight off just doesn't really trust that they're doing the best they can. So it automatically sets him off against his dad, which is also setting him off against Dr. Sayers, who is the guy who is treating his mom.
Captain Green, I'm gonna call them Miss Green and Captain Green because I got sick of writing Mark's dad and Mark's mum. But Captain
David
Green,
and Ruth.
Captain Green.
Yeah, I like Captain Green.
It's like calling him Captain.
I like it too.
So Captain Green, he, when he takes Mark's hospital, says it's one of the best hospitals in the world. And it, clearly that's possibly True, but also yeah. it's his, you know, all the way through is this is pride in the Navy and it's
absolutely
and the service he's given and the service that other service people, service other people in the Navy serving the Navy have, and it, you know, and we hear Dr. Sayers is actually a fantastic neurologist.
Yeah,
but you're right. I didn't think about it from that dimension. That March seems that because of his resentment for his dad and the Navy as a general, he's in general. He's just, yeah.
I think so as well. Like, and when he arrives that morning to meet Dr. Sayers, he is met with the full ceremony of, you know, raising the flag. Everyone stops what they're doing. Dr. Sayers salutes the flag. Captain Green stands there with his hand on his heart. And I was watching it going like, this scene is successfully doing two things right now. It's showing the pageantry of the military and from the outsider's point of view, because you have Mark going,
oh, what's going on? This is
we need to be upstairs with my mum.
Yeah. But
it also doesn't do it in a parody kind of way.
No,
and I think Dr. Sayers is a very, very clever character for that, because he passionately believes in the military.
Yeah.
And you can see that the way that he describes and the way that he speaks and the way that he acts. And, you know, certainly you just think that, like, kind of like what you were saying, Ed, is that, well, Captain Green thinks that the sun shines out of Dr. Sayers because he wears the uniform, not because he's a good doctor. And over the course of the episode, we are sort of forced to see our own prejudice through Mark.
Yes.
You know, just because we've gone in with a certain expectation, or just because we've seen, let's say, Mark in his natural environment, doesn't mean it's the only environment. It's not the only doctors in the world are the ones covered in blood with, you know, scrubs that need to be changed every 5 seconds. Yeah, and, you know,
exactly. And I think it's interesting as well for us, because we're so used to being in an ER, to actually see this slower pace of medicine and see this kind, this, you know, we're taking our time. So I felt the same as Green when I was watching it. I was like, why do we keep waiting? You know, it was all very wait and see. And Green was like, not wait and see. I want to get this test ordered. I want to get that done. You know, he's very impatient, because I think also, you know, it seems like this hospital is a bit of a kind of, maybe where they are is also a slower pace of life, and we're not used to that. And sometimes when you come out and you get into that, you're very impatient and you're not ready to be on that kind of rhythm, which is definitely there. But also, you know, this is his mom, and he just feels like they're not taking the care they should, which I imagine being a doctor would make even harder, watching other doctors treat your mom, if you're like, hang on a minute, you know.
He says to him, you know, I want a more aggressive approach, and Dr. Sayers is, what, I'm gonna be too passive. But it's interesting, Mark really, I've just had it popped into my head, Mark pushes for this MRI, and his mum, she's barely a minute in and she freaks out, for want of a better term. She really does not cope with it. She feels very lonely. And so they can't do the MRI. And so they go down Dr. Sayers' route, which is the neuro exam.
Yeah.
Which I think Dr. Sayers, he was reticent about doing the MRI, probably because he knew this is what's going to happen.
Well, yeah.
Experienced neurologist, he knows that suddenly in this situation, you stick them in that big white plastic tube and shoot whatever you shoot at them, they're going to be terrified.
And also, the neuro
exam reveals so much anyway. Suddenly her language skills have disappeared and her memory is all
absolutely
over the place.
And I think he knew also that you didn't need the MRI, because he knew what he had suspected and he knew how to get that answer. And it's horrible, actually, that scene, because it's the three of them. We've got Mark, we've got his mum, and we've got Dr. Sayers. And Dr. Sayers is asking questions, you know, testing her memory, testing kind of her cognition. He asks her about the phrase, you know, about glass house, people in glass houses shouldn't throw. Well, he said a brick, but I've always heard it as stones. But he was very into the brick.
It's his fault she didn't get the answer.
I'd be confused. Thing, like.
Also, I thought her answer was very clever.
It was.
I'd be like, I don't know if I'm the right judge of the results of this new exam, because I really liked your answer.
Yeah. Well, you didn't pass this exam, but you did pass my exam for best answer of the week.
Yeah.
But, and I think, So we watch from the outside because we see this kind of interplay between the three of them, and every so often we kind of get a close-up on Mark. We get kind of focus on Mark's face as he's going through all the different emotions, and we have a moment where, you know, he has to try and smile at his mom to make his mom feel like she's doing okay. But you also see that worry, and I just thought that delicacy to that scene was very beautiful.
It did remind me when the scene starts with Dr. Say is saying, now remember those three words. And I instantly remembered, former President Trump was talking about how great he was at that neuro exam. And that is only administered to people who are suspected to have brain damage or some kind of cognitive deficit.
Yeah, because I've never had that.
I'm delighted you passed. Terrifying that you had to take the exam.
I still don't know why he had to take that exam.
Maybe it is standard before we get ourselves in trouble. Maybe it is something that, you know, they have to do these tests for a president.
Maybe.
But I thought another thing about kind of Mark's pushing at the beginning is that, of course, I mean, like, not only he has all of his medical knowledge himself, but he is completely partial, not as opposed to impartial, because she's his mom, and she knows her and has known her for years, and she's Ruthie Green and everything. Dr. Sayers knows the patient.
Yes,
and absolutely.
And that's where Mark cannot make that distinction himself, because she's his mom. It's why you hear so often is that, you know, as a medical practitioner, is you're not really supposed to look after family, because you can't make impartial decisions.
Yeah. I mean, we saw Benton, didn't we? And he was trying to look after his mom, and the doctors were telling him one thing, and he just wasn't, he wouldn't have it, would he? And that's it. That, you know, you can't be impartial, and sometimes you do have to be the one to step away and go, this person knows a bit more possibly than I do.
Slight spoiler, but we will see that with another doctor later in this season. There is a Carter. Anyway, so.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, you're right.
So, basically, all of these doctors need to get the hell away from their family.
And so we kind of, what it does, this episode as well, is it feels quite jarring as a viewer, because you've come out of this kind of frenetic ER. We are in this slower pace kind of naval, everybody seems to know each other, very relaxed kind of thing, and so we feel disoriented, I think, with Green, and maybe feel as claustrophobic, because there's a lot of really, you know, we had the shots when he's in his bed and the bed is too small, and the camera's quite tight and close upon him, and there are a few moments like that where you just kind of see him alone, framed in a way that just, he just looks so out of place, and I thought that was very, very clever. But as you say, you know, he's arguing with his dad. At one point, somebody calls the house. Mark takes a message. He starts asking the dad about, you know, who is this person? What does mom go to on a Thursday? And the dad says he doesn't know. And Mark's obviously very angry by this answer. But he later learns, actually, she's been seeing a therapist. She's actually been on antidepressants and she's been seeing a therapist. And for Green, I think, he's like, see, dad, you didn't know what you've done this. You know, he straight away kind of blames his dad without really knowing.
So any of the details.
But also it's like not everybody, and especially of that generation, is comfortable about sharing the fact that they are in therapy or taking tablets, even to their spouse. You know, they might. There's a sense of they don't want the spouse to worry about them, but also they don't want the spouse to feel guilty, because actually, are they going to think they've done something? But straight away, Green just kind of forgets all that. And he's really aggressive with his, you know, he's really, because his dad's then saying, look, I don't know about that. And his dad doesn't want to be at the MRI as well, which I thought was, you know, he went home, and you have this moment where Green's, he's gone home to build a ramp. And Dr. Sayers is like, that's a really good idea.
Well, exactly, because one, she's physically going to need one. So, but that aside, it's that Mark is, you know, he spends all day, every day around medicine, around medical equipment, around people who are enfeebled, people who are, you know, sometimes chopped up. yes, his dad served in the military for a long time, but that doesn't necessarily mean he spent all day, every day around body parts.
Absolutely.
And we learned that he actually served a lot of time on aircraft carriers. And, you know, he was, I think, more on the mechanic side. Now, never mind rank for a second, but he was more in the mechanical core than, say, he would have been seeing actual, at least the way it's described, rather than being in a war zone. And so, I mean, this is a man in his, let's say, 70s. What's he going to do? Stand around and watch all of these things be done to his wife, where he doesn't understand really. He knows it's to help her, but he doesn't understand what's being done. So what he does is he gets out and he keeps himself active so that he's not just standing around worrying. He's not just standing around being a nuisance. And he understands that better than Mark does.
Yes, absolutely that. I think he's also gone, what are the ways I can actually do something to help? Oh, hang on, I could build this, and that would make him feel better as well. Take his mind off it. Also, look, I'm doing something practical. I mean, he's quite mad at Mark because Mark has ordered a syphilis test, and I get why Mark has ordered it, because, you know, dementia and this kind of, it, that can happen. But it is a really taboo, you know, what he's insinuating is that his dad has obviously gone off and slept around and brought something back home.
Yeah.
And that's really humiliating for the dad. And I did feel for the dad when he's kind of like, he's really takes, you know, he's not happy the fact that he's done that. And he kind of confronts him and is like, what do you think about me? And just handle some of this stuff better. Like, maybe don't order that first or straight off. Like, maybe do some other tests. I don't know. It just felt very... maybe have a better way of talking to your dad about it.
That too as well. Like, you know, you can be direct without being hurtful and blunt.
Yeah.
And he is being hurtful and blunt. I think he's just looking for someone to blame.
Yes.
You know, because dementia is horrible. It is just a bloody horrible illness that it happens. You know, yes, there can be contributing factors. For example, encephalitis, they mention syphilis. These can be contributing factors. But at the end of the day, the human body is a machine that breaks down over time. Yeah. And it's perfectly natural to want to go, I have all of this rage inside me and I have to direct this at something. And there's a very, I mean, it is both heavy-handed and also quite nice, the scene where Mark starts punching the punching bag in the garage.
Yes.
And I mean, yes, it's a little on the nose, but I actually think that his dad plays the scene, or let's say is written slightly better than Mark in that scene, that he doesn't do very much, but he holds the bag.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And that's what comes across, I think, throughout the whole of this episode. I don't know, but I felt like the dad came off really well. Like, Mark has come and gone, this is big ogre, and he's all awful and does all this stuff. And then you get there, you're like, actually, he's not as bad as you're kind of making out. This is definitely your tension. And I think, you know, that has obviously, you know, is a big part of that. We've also got Cynthia kind of flitting around in the background. I mean, she's, you know, she's gone food shopping and she's going to try and cook, and she's getting along quite well with the dad. And, you know, those moments are sweet. Which is sweet. Yeah. But it's just hard to watch when you know what we know.
This really uncomfortable bit. So Mark is clearly upset. He's lying in bed. He's got a real contemplative look on his face. And she comes in
His mom's gown, because they've
dressing gown,
because they've lost her bag at the the airline, have lost her bag, so she's having to obviously borrow clothes.
Yeah, so she comes in, she says, "Oh, do you want me to give you a back rub?" And then she basically just seducing him. Like, you can hear his dad coughing away in the background.
Yeah,
like Cynthia. Like,
if he can hear that, Cynthia, you can hear that.
Yeah,
and if she can hear that, why? Maybe let me distract you, but I don't think it is that.
Definitely not. Yeah. And not in his mom's gown. You know, that to me is like, and he even says, "You're in my mom's gown." Like, obviously that smells of her. And
she even says, "Is this too weird?" And it's like, yeah.
Yeah. And you know it.
You know it is. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm being really horrible to Cynthia, but she doesn't come off well in this episode.
She doesn't. And I think that's the point, isn't it? I think they they tried to make her as cloying as possible, because it all adds to the tension, and it all adds to kind of, this is what happens because Green can't, you know, make decisions, yeah, or can't have grown-up conversations. So this is kind of where we end up, which is horrible. So Green is basically, he says, you know, to his dad, well, we see him in the library and he's obviously researching doctors, and he's mm-hmm. already said to his dad, you know, that it's not aggressive enough and he's going to try and figure stuff out. And then when he gets home, he's lying and smoking. So he's back to smoking, and he's kind of lying on that. He's outside in the garden, and Cynthia comes out again to try and just comfort him, see how he's yeah. doing. And they get into a conversation, and she's being so nice to him. She's very much like, you're so generous. You're such, you know, you're the best lover. Yeah. You're just, you know, you're lovely and wonderful. And he immediately tries to kick her for this. And, you know, he says, oh yeah, I'm just a magnet for kind of needy people, which is, I mean, he might as well have just said, I'm a magnet for people like you, Cynthia.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, this is the thing, is that she does pick up on these things. And yet for quite a while, just seems to be like, all right, this hurts. Anyway, so I'm here and, you know, I'll give you a foot rub now. Or yeah. Like, but, and you're kind of going, and maybe this is very unfair in the real world, but as a character, I'm just like, Cynthia, at this point, your middle name is Welcome. You know?
This is it. Yeah.
Like, she's edging into two-dimensional character here. And it's...
right.
I'm actually not going to say it's a disservice to the character, because I don't feel overall there is much of a three-dimensional character in Cynthia. Now, I'm totally fine if you disagree with me on that one. I think personally, though, I struggle with her because, again, this sort of, would Puppy like a treat?
I think what they did is that they tried to give her depth with the fact that, you know, she's got this kid and she's got this other life that we don't really know a lot about, but it doesn't really come off because they don't spend enough time. So what they've done is drop these little hints as to all this other stuff going on, but we don't get to spend enough time with her, which is no bad thing because you can't flesh out every single character. We just don't have time. But I agree with you. It feels very much like her things are, she's very needy, she's come to kind of show how Green is, you know, can't have adult conversations and how terrible he can be at things, and she's here to kind of, you know, help force some issues that need to come to a head in a way for them to kind of tie things up in a bow. But yeah, I think that's it. I think they had an idea, and I don't know, it felt like they were starting to flesh her out and then they kind of pulled that back and just went, okay, we contract over, you're off, so we're gonna, or we're bored of you, or yeah.
I wonder, yeah. I think the revelation that she has a child could have been a turning point, and it wasn't.
Yeah, we didn't go anywhere with it. It just was like, I have a kid, I'm gonna wrap stuff up, send it, and I'm never gonna mention it again.
And that's it. And I think, yeah, that I think it could be quite what you say as well. Listen, the contract is up, we're, you know, we wrote ourselves nearly into a corner here. We could write ourselves out of it, but we only have Mariska for two more episodes.
Yeah, she's off. She's doing other things. So this is the scene that I really struggled with for Mark. I wanted to punch him. It's when they go to that bar.
Oh, yeah.
And they meet, I mean, that guy was being very strange. So, you know, they came in and he's all like, you can't be here today because this is a night for people in the Navy only. And, you know, and Green's just like, I don't care, I'm staying, you know, starts arguing with this guy.
I imagine the barman going, sorry, if they've got money, they are fully welcome here. Thank you very much.
They're the youngest people in here. I want some youth to talk to for once. You know, and it turns out the guy was just taking the piss. He's actually a friend of, you know, of Mark's dad. And he's the one who brings up the fact that, you know, the dad could have been an admiral, and he,
this is a revelation, because, you know, now myself and Ed particularly, like, our experience of rankings would be from Star Trek, and admirals are, that's a big step.
It is an enormous
show. Confidence, a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, the admiral basically pulls the, or not, what am I trying to say? The admiral's in charge. I mean, big time.
So the captain has a ship, the admiral will look after a bit of a fleet.
And is that quite
training ground or something like that?
Yeah.
And does that marry up to kind of what an admiral, the kind of roles in the military?
Well, funny enough, particularly the Navy. So the naval roles were the inspiration.
I suppose they have a ship in a way, don't they? Do they?
That's it. Well, that's it exactly, yes. And, you know, captain to admiral is a big jump, whatever way you look at it. Mm. But certainly the way it's portrayed in the Navy, it's sort of one step. Now, it's a big step, but it's one step. Whereas I think in other, like in the Air Force, for example, there are more steps after captain. I might be completely wrong there, but I'm using Stargate as my entire frame of reference.
Feel free
for the Air
to
Force.
Roast him in the comments.
But please do. Please do. Yeah. But I think Stargate generally got incredibly good responses for how it portrays the military. I'm going to go, right, well, if they got it wrong, it's on them. But I think they got it right. Yeah. So I think in the Air Force and other aspects, there's Admiral still a big thing, but there's more steps. Whereas in the Navy, yes, I think it goes Captain Admiral. But still, like, the fact
that is
turned down an Admiralty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was his big...
That was
his big
thing.
Ambition. That was the big deal. It's like going into senior management. Do you know what I mean? It's...
Yeah.
CEO of a, and I think for Mark as well, you know, I think somehow I get the feeling he looks at his dad as, you were in this military, you went and they treated you like crap, you didn't even end up as anything, you know, you'd like, it'd be okay if you were away from me and you were an admiral or you were a captain, because I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, you did something with it, but you actually were away from me and then you didn't even scale any kind of cool heights. You could have stayed back and done something else, you know. I think there's a real tension to that, but you know, we hear about the fact that the dad gave up the kind of the admiralty, and then the dad appears, but the dad is angry, you know. He comes in and straight away they kind of start having an argument, don't they? Because Green is basically taken everything Dr. Sayers has done and ordered other things instead, and ordered the syphilis test, as we've said, and you know, not really spoken to the dad or kind of consulted the dad, which I think that must be really frustrating when you are an adult, because when you're an adult and you have a kid or there's a kid around, no matter how old they get, they will always be your kid, you know, and to have somebody kind of come in and kind of usurp your role of knowledge and your role of
true, yeah,
you know, you're not really respected. Like, there's a way of including or saying, look, dad, from my point of view, these are the things that I think you could do, rather than just coming in going, I know better, the person you trust is an idiot, I'm gonna just overrule everything, you know. But he just keeps going and going, and the dad can't breathe, and he's like, your mom's depressed, you're doing such a good job, you know, she's in therapy because of you, which, you know, he does not know that at
that
all.
Is a horrific thing to say to anyone, that you're the cause of someone being in therapy.
That's just cruelty beyond cruelty.
Exactly,
because
that is having a real go. That's saying something to her, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, he knows what he's saying, he knows how the impact, and I mean, it really does show how much pain he is in, but it's also really hard to watch, especially as the dad is like literally collapsing on him and he's still like going. Then he finally is like, oh, you know, call an ambulance, we better check on him. So he basically hospitalizes his dad, which, you know, at the same time that the mom is in hospital, probably not the best idea. I don't know.
No.
And then the dad is also very like, we can't tell your mom, you know, and he's put the dad in this horrible position of he's kind of really felled, you know, it's very Oedipal in some ways. He's trying to kill his dad.
Oh,
isn't he?
Right. So he can look after his mom all by himself.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll have her now to me because you've done a bad job and I'm better, you know, and it's
not quite fully Oedipal, but still.
There's some shades of that going on here. And so they end up in the hospital, the dad ends up in the hospital. But then I think we get this really brilliant scene in the hospital where they both kind of get to see a side of each other that they might not have seen.
Really like this bit,
which honest. I thought was really
powerful,
and really a really interesting way of doing it, rather than kind of going, and especially because, you know, these are two men who we know can't communicate. So instead of actually having a sit down in a chat and going, hang on, this is what's going on, they kind of it's for them, they need something like this, an exposition. So, you know, the dad's in the hospital. We hear an aircraft has gone down and they're bringing in the patients. The pilot comes in and the pilot feels so guilty. He's like, this is all my fault. You know, I've done something wrong. Yeah. And Mark gets to see his dad kind of comfort him and see his knowledge and see the way his wisdom as well. You know,
I think it's the charisma that comes from being a captain. He was a captain of a ship. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have some presence to be able to do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was great, said you did the right thing. And it really helps the lad until he stops breathing. But
really helps him until he stops breathing, of course. Yeah. But you're right, sorry.
But they get to see each other as grown-ups and professionals. They're not just Mark, my pain in the arse son, and the captain who's this distant, difficult person. Do you know what I mean? It's
selfish, you know,
It's one of those magical moments when you see a brother or any member of your family as a whole human being rather than just who they are to me. Do you know what I mean? Like that bit.
I agree. And we get marked it. So, you know, the pilot collapses, stops breathing, and he's able to help because the doctors are short. And it was actually quite funny to see other doctors. It was weird. It was like they're all running around, and I'm like, where's Carol and Carter?
They're saying the words that the other people that we like are saying.
Yeah.
Oh my god, is this a test run to replace all of the actors?
Is this a real hospital? That's a fake one, or which one's which? Yeah, yeah.
Was weird, but then and especially when Mark's kind of helping out, and you know the guy comes over and he says, you know, I'm sure you can't practice here. He's like, no, I don't even have a license in this state. And then he's like, but you can help with this intern. And so Mark is turning this hospital into a teaching hospital, so I think that should get double points.
Very much yes.
Yeah.
And he stands and teaches, and his dad watches him do that and sees what an awesome doctor his son is and how powerful he can be and what his skill set is, I guess. So there's a moment of a mutual appreciation. Not that they'll ever say it to each other.
Oh,
but,
no.
But we've seen it.
Yeah.
No foolishness like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I realize it's all to do with legalese and insurance, but I mean, like, humans in California are probably pretty similar to humans in Chicago. So, I mean, the fact that I don't have a license in this state is just baffling. I was like, anyway.
It's insurance. It's just not all insured. Like, it's simple as that, isn't it?
Yeah. And
that's rubbish.
No sense. So, like, legally, if Mark were to operate, he could be sued. You know, or lose his license. You're just like, anyway.
The insurance wouldn't pay or, you know, all kinds of things,
Oh, an uninsured doctor or something. But anyway, but he's able to at least talk her through it. Because I remember, funnily enough, I remember from my last big rewatch of ER 10 years ago, this scene, for some reason, this has always stuck in my head, this scene. And maybe it's like that. Okay. Maybe it's the complete switch of imagery. We still have Mark, but the room is different. Mm. That conversation of, I don't even have a license here. Just like, what are you talking about? Like, you're the most qualified doctor in a different hospital. Okay.
In a different city. Yeah.
And, but even like going back a few episodes to Corday and Allison and Dr. Cochrane, even he didn't have permission to operate in County General. Like, he had to go and seek. It's a strange privileges. Thing.
Yeah. It is.
And so he's able to say to her, okay, listen, and as the doctor is going away, he says, you know, take anything Mark says as an order. It's like, grant, if a lawyer was walking by, they'd be like, don't you dare.
I'm here, let me stop, stop this. Yeah. And then, so, you know, Green is obviously at the end kind of his rope in some ways. And, you know, he's ordered all these tests. He's spoken to the therapist who has said, I can tell you anything you want. I was hoping we would learn stuff there, but they cut away. And I was like, oh, this is the interesting stuff.
Yes.
Then he goes on a run because he's Mr. You know, I can't talk about it, but I can run it out. Because he's like his dad, you know, action. I can't be here when this MRI is happening. I'm going to build something. He's like, I'm going to go for a run.
Yeah.
Cynthia comes out, says, oh, your doctor friend called Dr. Hemmings. She wants to, you know, because he's called in this, what he calls a civilian doctor to kind of go over the case.
Oh, yeah.
Also, actually, sorry, the reason I picked up the psychiatrist again was because I wanted to say that he's the first one who says to Green, I agree with Dr. Sayers. You know, this is the first moment we've had somebody independent kind of say Dr. Sayers is right. So then he meets his friend who he went to medical school with. And, you know, she's, you know, got these kids and they're laughing about the old days and how Mark seemed really settled with his wife and his kid. And she was apparently this Dr. Hemmings was very independent, whatever that means, very ambitious, but now she has her own kids. Anyway, it's cute. We get a little idea of what, of Mark's little kind of past. And I don't know, I got the sense that maybe Dr. Hemmings kind of fancied him a little bit back then because she was like, you know, you're with Jen then, and you know, I don't know, you seem so settled. And kind of reveling in the fact that she was now doing better than him in some ways. It's a bit like, haha, I picked the right choice, you know, I didn't go with you.
Interesting.
And then she also concurs and says, look, you know, Dr. Sayers is right, so this is the second time we've got something, you know, where we've gone, this is a, you know, a completely out of their professional who's gone, he's really a great doctor and what he's saying is correct. But she does also land the blow that your mom may never be the same, so
she might not fully recover at all,
which is sad, isn't it? It's just really
a hard pill to swallow, isn't it?
But you know what, Dr. Sayers is a really cool, sorry, you want to expand on that? Sorry,
who?
I just totally agreeing with you there, just like it's the news you never want to get. It's like you want it to be like, oh grand, okay, x amount of treatment and then you know, right, we'll have her back and it'll be fine. And no, I think as soon as, and again, credit to the writers in this episode, as soon as they start to say at the very beginning, you know, the little series of strokes and infarcts and everything, it's just like, there's not going to be a happy, happy ending to this episode, is there?
No.
You know?
It's not going to be, we found it, we've fixed it, she's back, you know, off she goes on a marathon. It's the start, isn't it, of a deterioration.
Yes.
And I have to say, I think Dr. Sayers is a really good guy because Mark comes back and apologises and he has treated Dr. Sayers appallingly, really. You know, he's argued with him, undermined him, brought in experts around him, you know, and he apologises. And Dr. Sayers, instead of going, well, you punk, he goes, actually, you know what, I get it because that's your mom. And I thought, wow, you are a really decent guy.
And he says all along, he says it earlier on, says, look, if I was in the ER, I'd be a mess. But, and they bond a bit about their dads as well, don't they? It's quite like,
all these issues, these daddy issues with these, you know, so,
yeah,
you know, and it's kind of the road that Mark didn't take. So Dr. Sayers went into the Navy to kind of follow his dad. And, you know, Mark did the opposite because he didn't want to be near his dad. But, you know, obviously also still wanted his dad's attention. And Dr. Sayers says to him, you know, it didn't help. We didn't get any closer, me joining. So it's kind of an opening into actually, even if Mark had gone down the, you know, the Navy route, doesn't mean him and his dad would have been any closer, you know. And I just thought, oh, gosh, this is, you know, a lot of, you know, we need to get men talking and talking out loud, talking to their families, talking about their feelings, talking about everything. And, you know, so many things might be different. And I'm not saying that's the only thing in the world, but I just think, look at these generations of being quiet and being strong and being the steady force and not speaking up, what it can do. And the, I mean, if they could have both said what they were feeling at any point, or the dad could have explained stuff, I don't know. It just, things might have been better.
If he'd just known that his father had passed up the Admiralty, do you know what I mean? It would have made more sense.
Yeah.
Their relationship would have been healthier, possibly. I don't know.
Well, they bring the mom home and she's on full form here. She is completely... You know, she just basically starts, she seems very excited. She does seem more lucid as well. She's very much like, this happened here, this happened there. And then Mark kind of goes, no, that was different. But I don't know, she seemed a lot more excited and different to how she was in the hospital, I guess. Yeah. But it comes up and she starts talking to Cynthia and she's like saying, you know, Cynthia burnt the dinner, and she kind of says to Cynthia, you know, it's more than sex. You have to
keep conversation a family. Sex is just,
And she talks about her sex life with her, you know, with Mark's dad, which is always uncomfortable, but...
Glad to know they always had good sex. Next point.
Yeah. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah. But, you know, she kind of says to Cynthia, you know, you're not going to make him happy. And Mark doesn't really say anything will help. And she leaves, you know, which...
And it's just like...
It's something about kids. They say something about kids. And he's like, well, I'm not going to have kids for a while. It's
Something about, wanting more than whatever this is, and he's kind of like, oh no, we're not thinking about that, and she's like, are we not
and like, you know, you can look at it from both sides. One is that, my good lord, she went way ahead with the plans in her head and she was writing the script and everything, and but then on the other hand, as he says himself, he let it go on way too long, and he knew what it wasn't. He might have known what it was, or might not have known what it was, but he definitely knew what it wasn't, and it was never going to be long term. And even anyone knew that she wasn't in it for just casual relationship.
And he was warned so much, and he has eyes himself, you know. This wasn't a case of him being very honest with her and from the beginning, and all of a sudden she's turned up bunny boiler style, kind of, you know. This is really, he has engineered a lot of this and he is to blame. And I'm glad he finally says it to her, and she's a lot smarter than I think she sometimes lets on, you know. Which would have been, if we'd spend more time with it, it might be more interesting to see that come out and see actually... I felt like, oh, there's more to you, isn't there? But then we didn't get it. So they have this walk, and they basically, he ends it, doesn't he? And says he apologizes, and she's like, well, I'm going to go straight away. You know, I'm off. I'm not going to hang around.
Why would you hang around? Do you know what I mean? You just...
Absolutely.
Where you'd feel not wanted. And then the mum has been talking about your sex life with her son. You know, it's just like, yeah, I'm going to go.
Yeah, I'm out. And also, he starts saying, oh, you know, we'll talk about it when I get back. She says, no, I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk to you anymore. So she goes away. And then we get this moment with Green and the mom, and
in the bedroom. Yeah.
In the bedroom where he kind of,
it's beautiful.
He's talking to her, he's kind of caring for her and stuff. And then he starts asking her about the Admiralty, because he doesn't really know the full story. And it turns out the reason his dad had given it up was because Mark was being bullied. So instead of kind of staying and working towards the Admiralty, he quit and transferred home so he could be home to help. And actually
got a desk job, didn't he?
What a sacrifice. But also, that is the biggest act of love of, oh, my son needs me, I am going to show up. And all this time, Mark didn't equate, though. He didn't know, I guess, because again, people didn't talk. But it's a real moment where you go, hang on a minute, everything I thought about this one person or this situation is actually wrong.
I'm going to read the quote because it's beautiful. Because Dr. Black is her psychiatrist. And this is clearly what they've talked about. She says, Dr. Black says that you and your father are responsible for your own feelings. But I know I started it. I blamed him. I blamed you. I didn't want a baby, which, since she wrote for this earlier on, it was too soon. We'd only dated a couple of times. Of course, when I saw you, I loved you. And I tried to make up for it. But I'd already spoiled everything between you and your father. Just kept going wrong, no matter how much I loved you both. I was like, oh, she's taking all that on herself that they don't get on. It's not her fault. It's just they're too similar and too different in some ways. And
that's it. And no one's talking.
No one's talking.
You know, like, I'm sure Mark, all he wants to say is, oh God, this is not your fault. Or, you know, I could nearly feel the unspoken words of, you know, me and dad, we don't hate each other. We just don't get along. But of course, he doesn't say it, because then you fear, is he bringing his knowledge of what her diagnosis really is into the room? Is there a kind of doesn't really matter what I say at this point, because we could be having the same conversation 10 times over.
Yeah, I personally think he's not ready to say anything because he's still processing. And I think it's kind of been this big bombshell. You know, he's heard this story about his dad and what his dad did, which makes him rethink that. He's heard that his mom didn't even want him, which may have been a big kind of surprise to him. I felt so heartbroken for her because I thought, because at no point did she kept saying, it's my fault, it was too late by then. But she doesn't ever have a reason or an example of how she was the problem, you know. Yeah. And also I think, you know, there are so many, a million different things conspire every single day for different outcomes. You know, we can only control as much as we can. Yes. And I mean, it was heartbreaking. And, you know, Mark's got tears in his eyes, and it's a real reckoning for him of kind of his, everything he's believed and everything he's understood about his family and himself, possibly, in this kind of moment with his very vulnerable mom, who is now on a decline, which,
yeah,
you know, is also really, must be really, really horrible. And then we have
that, this, yeah, could be, sorry, just the last thing on that, this please, could be the best she will ever be.
Yeah.
And that's the most lucid she can be right now. Yeah.
And what does any of that stuff mean? You know, in the grand scheme of things, what does that little slight here and that little argument there mean when you're faced with losing somebody you love, you know, and going, hang on, those little things don't even matter, you know, that we argued about. I was just going to say the way they end it, I thought was just brilliant, because, you know, all the way through, we've seen Green and his dad kind of at loggerheads, more kind of from Green's side. And I think part of it is, you know, all the stuff we've discussed, but I think there's something as well about you don't know how to look after mom. You're not looking after mom correctly. I'm now having to leave her with you, and you don't know what you're doing, and you're neglectful, and you. And so they have a moment where the smoke alarm goes off and it's nighttime, and kind of Green wakes up, and the dad wakes up, and it's Ruth. She's been in the kitchen. She's been trying to make breakfast or make something. And, you know, she tried to use her walker, which she was told not to use until it was, you know, ready for her. And basically she set something on fire. She's fallen. The smoke alarm's going off. So they have to kind of come in that commotion as well. She's also weed herself. So there's this, it's just chaos. And, you know, the dad is trying to help as much as he can, and Green's trying to help. So they have to kind of help her and get her back, to, you know, get her sorted, get her washed. And Green goes out because I think it's probably a bit too much for him. But he has this moment where he looks through the window and he sees the dad with the mom, and they're having this conversation. And I thought it was a real moment where he's gone, actually, maybe my dad does know what he's doing and can look after her. And that's how I felt.
Yeah, he has that look through the window, doesn't he?
And it's a private moment that they're not performing for him. It's just a private moment between them. He's happened to see. And I thought, oh, look, they do function. They do make sense as a couple. There is something there. I think it's hard sometimes for kids of parents to remember that they're two people away from you. They're humans and a marriage away from you as whoever you are to them. You know, it's not all just what you see or what you think. They have their own world. And that was, I thought, a really sweet moment. And it kind of leads to the next day when, you know, there's a car, that's a car drive. Where is it going? What's happening? It's actually, you know, Green has taken his dad for a drive to the beach where they used to, you know, they have memories of. It's a place of connection. And we learn that the dad has given up smoking, which I thought.
Good Lord.
And I love the way it's like, you've been smoking for this long and you've just given up cold turkey. And the dad's like, like,
I know.
Hard as nails, man.
That is impressive.
Yeah. Somebody give me, you know, I mean, I don't smoke, but if I ever did, I need his plan, whatever his tape is about hypnosis or whatever. And they have a really lovely moment where they actually speak like father and son for once. And there isn't that kind of resentment or anger or let's talk about mom or let's talk about. It's just, I remember when this happened. And it feels like they're both seeing each other in a different light.
Yeah, I love this chat about the he asks him about how many planes set up, you know, launched every day,
and
all this sort of stuff, and it was just
real interest in him.
I was fascinated.
Person.
Yeah, I was like, oh wow, and he was talking about seeing the USS Kittiwake. Kizzy Hawk?
I want to say Hawk. I might be wrong.
And how Mark was terrified of it because it was just so massive.
Yeah.
I was like, and clearly he did idolise his dad when he was a kid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
We hear that whole bit about the fact that his dad had gone on a plane and he'd begged his mom to get him the same plane, and the dad had come back and said, oh, that's not the right one, you know.
Yeah.
You get this idea of this boy just being like, oh my God, my dad, you know, he's a hero and he's in these... And that obviously all chipped away as life went on. But it's just a real sweet moment of possible closure in some ways. We know that things aren't always going to be perfect, but maybe things are going to be better or different.
Yeah. Going in the right direction, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Exactly.
Yeah. It does open that up for the later relationship that Mark has with his dad, which is... I don't want to, you know, get ahead of ourselves, but I think it's beautiful.
Mm. I mean, they do it so well. That's what they are just so well. These kind of, when they bring these people in, the kind of those relationships, familial stuff is just, it's astonishing. It's great. But that's the episode. So
it is. Yeah. So in a way, you're right. In terms of, say, story, because it doesn't have all of the different elements that we normally have, it feels like less happened.
Yeah.
But it's in a way it's enormous, and we cap off. Thank God. Off the Cynthia storyline.
Yes, I'm over that. It's like I can't watch you string her along anymore.
No. And I can't watch her beg for the scraps from your table. So I'm glad that's done. And you know, thankfully it's just, you know, roses for Mark from here on.
That's it. Fine. It's all sorted.
So,
about Iber?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Ed, you had a couple there, I know.
So, I don't know how I recognise it. Sharon was in awe. I don't know.
I was. No, it was awe.
So, Dr. Hemmings, Mark's friend from medical school, is played by Jessica Tuck, who I recognise from True Blood, where she played the American Vampire League spokesperson, Nan Flanagan. Who's an ancient, I want to say, Irish vampire. And she's also been in, what was that? I just heard it.
No, so like, you know, it could be, no, sorry, unless it was out and outstated on screen. I was like, well, Flanagan. Yeah, Flanagan's an Irish name. So,
I think they mentioned that. I think they did. She's been in loads of other stuff. So she plays a lot of senators and doctors.
She does have that.
She's an authority, doesn't she? She's in Rizzoli and Isles as Dr. Victoria Nolan, and in Scandal as a senator and a first lady in another show, and just loads of these sort of serious characters. A prison warden in Bones. But anyway, so yeah, she's... I don't think she's been touched by an angel, thank God.
Thank God.
Yeah, no, right?
Wait. No, she has.
Oh.
Oh, she
did. It sounds like you have an angel that you can't commandeer and you commanded it.
Time means nothing.
Yeah.
I'm just still checking she wasn't touched. She was in the OJ Simpson story in Diagnosis Murder. And
Diagnosis Murder. Yes.
Yeah, Revenge of the Nerds 4, Nerds in Love, playing a character called Gaylord.
Oh. Ooh. Mm.
Yeah. Murder She Wrote, Murder She Wrote.
Murder, she wrote.
And another one called Flesh-Eating Mothers in 1988.
Oh,
so, yeah, I love those random ones.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So, yeah, that's cool. Jessica Tuck.
Okay. I have one very small part. So Admiral J from The Bar was played by Robert Simmons. Now, one of those people, you know, long, long career, but... appeared in The Exorcist, appeared in Catch Me If You Can. Yeah.
Cool films.
Appeared in Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Ah, I knew that was coming.
Absolutely, yeah. Alias, else we got? Quantum Leap, Knight Rider, Frankly Insane Beauty and the Beast series with Ron Perlman.
Remember that?
Linda Hamilton was in it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And did he live in the sewers or something?
Something like that.
Yeah, it was a strange...
show, but I watched it.
Airwolf, So, Saint Elsewhere, which I think was the other kind of big, long-running one
Denzel Washington,
preceding, yeah, preceding ER. That was 82 to 88. And it was, he was in one episode as Dr. Friedman. He was in Cheers as well. So he was kind of in an awful lot.
As was the next one, which is Holmes Osborne, who was the Dr. Sayers. And every time I say Dr. Sayers, I just think about Dr. Sayers, Dr. Sayers.
That's all I think about.
The whole episode.
Every time I was singing it the whole way through. And then I thought, have I made that up? And I had to look it up, but I did not. It is a Simpsons thing. Thank you.
Yeah, it's the Planet of the Apes, isn't it?
Yeah. Dr. Sayers. Anyway, sorry.
So he's been in shed loads of stuff. He's got 99 credits compared to the other actor I've mentioned whose name's gone out of my head. How terrible. But yeah, he was in Donnie Darko was the dad, Eddie Darko. He's been in House MD. He's one of those people that I've seen in lots of things. But yeah, he was in Invasion, which was a short-lived mystery show. Ron Burgundy, stuff like that, really. Yeah. So yeah, that's my other Iver.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, he's an Enterprise as an Enolian official. That means anything to you, Sean? In the episode Canamar. I don't know Enterprise role because I thought it was pants. But he was touched by an angel just before he went to space with Enterprise.
Oh, I see. Well, that's
no wonder. That's fair. That's what you would do. You'd get off Earth as quick as you can.
Exactly. So yeah, that's my Ibers.
There we go.
All right. Do we have any drugs or conditions this week?
No, I didn't this time because I think there was dementia. That just makes me too sad.
It is too sad.
That is absolutely fair. Then I think at this point we should call it. Thanks for listening to our podcast about everything ER. Don't forget, you can find us on social media, on Instagram at YouSetTheTonePod and at Set_Pod on Twitter. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And remember, you set the tone.